Blog Talk Radio.
The key word today is Giants. New York Giants. New York Giants. No, we're not going to talk about the San Francisco Giants. Radio on air right now. Right now we are live with the one and only Randy Zelia, that is me, along with the one and the only host of Beyond the Benches every Sunday here on the Back Sports Page Radio Network, the one and only Scooter himself, Ryan Stern. Ryan, good evening, my friend.
Good evening, Randy. It's a pleasure to come back to my old roots.
Your old roots, which is Wednesday nights?
that would be real sports talk radio.
Yeah, okay, very, very good, very good. Well, I just wanted to give you a quick update on a bunch of different things here. Real quick, Jose Padilla will not be joining us in the next couple weeks. He's got that clause in his contract to get some time off, so he's gonna be MIA for a little bit. So I'm going to have a plethora. That's right, I'm using three amigos terms. We're going to use a plethora of different co-hosts throughout the next couple weeks. See what the rest of it is. We have so much stuff going on over the next weeks. Now, Ryan, I understand you're going to be going to the New York Football Giants Monday night football game next couple weeks for Back Sports Page. You're going to roam the crowd and distract a bunch of different people from watching the game.
I am going to make sure that Giants fans actually enjoy the game. And what am I going to do? I'm going to ask some people some questions, maybe do a little Giants trivia for Back Sports Page at the stadium, maybe have some giveaways, and it's going to be a real good time.
Awesome. Glad to hear that, and I'm glad you're going to be there having some fun. We're going to start this off where I think in the metro area, New York metro area, where we should be again, is the 0-5 Giants. The New York Football Giants are 0-5. Now, let me ask you, what is the bigger story at this point, being a New York football fan? Is it the 3-2 Jets, or is it the 0-5 Giants? I really wanted to say 0-5 Cowboys, but it's the 0-5 Giants.
The bigger story is the 0-5 Giants, only because I think coming into the year, the Giants had aspirations of a Super Bowl playing in their home stadium. Now, while the Jets are surprising everybody, 3-2, you have to realistically look at the rest of their schedule. They have a real tough schedule the rest of the way. I do not think they'll be able to keep up with the pace that they started from the beginning of the season. The real story is how atrocious the New York Giants have looked.
I agree with you to a point there. I think right now you're looking at the New York Giants, and you know what? You're seeing some glimpses here and there. Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, and Ruben Randall, you know what you're going to get out of your receivers. The running game with your running backs and your fullback is a by committee type of situation. They really don't have a number one back. I think they're really pushing David Wilson to be that number one back, but I just don't think he's there yet. He still loves doing punt returns. Brian, I ask you, what is the answer for the running game for the Giants? Is it a free agent they can go out and get? Is it the guys they already have on the roster? Or is this something they're going to have to address in the draft?
It's nothing that they're going to be able to do this season. The answer for the Giants running game this season is to completely abandon it and just have Eli throw the ball 50 times a game. And even though Eli's thrown a bunch of picks so far this year, Giants lead the entire NFL in turnovers, you got to put the ball in the hands of your biggest weapons. And right now, the Giants' best weapons are Victor Cruz, Hakeem Nicks, and Ruben Randall. Brandon Jacobs is not the same running back that he used to be. David Wilson, who knows how long this neck injury is going to keep him out. And Darrell Scott, as good of a story as he may be, where he gets cut and then re-signed a week later after the David Wilson injury, he's not the answer either. So I think the best answer for the running game this year is to completely abandon it.
We're going to be talking Giants football for a little while. Lou Musto of Sports Journey and Cover 32, also a contributor at SNY.com, will be joining us around 7:15 to discuss everything New York Giants. And let's talk about the Jets for a few minutes here. Big win in Atlanta. I'm trying to figure out whether the Jets played that well or if Atlanta played that bad. And, you know, Atlanta went into the season with the hopes of possibly going for the Super Bowl. They won in Steven Jackson. They lose Michael Turner. And Tony Gonzalez, who originally was going to retire, comes back for another year. I was listening to a bunch of different radio shows this morning, Ryan, and the talk seems to be whether they should be moving Tony Gonzalez or not and try and getting a draft pick. What do you think of that?
I don't think Tony Gonzalez wants to move. I think the only team that he'll approve a trade to is Kansas City. Kansas City is in need of a tight end. Friend of the program, Anthony Fasano, has been banged up with some injuries. He is looking to return this weekend. But in all fairness, Anthony Fasano isn't Tony Gonzalez. The Kansas City Chiefs, if they add a piece like Tony Gonzalez, it may make them one of the favorites, maybe the second favorite behind Denver in the AFC. And I really think that would be the only place for Tony Gonzalez to go. Going back to whether or not it was the Jets playing well or Atlanta playing very poorly, their defense, the Atlanta Falcons defense, is just as atrocious as the Giants. They have even less of a pass rush than the Giants, which is unbelievable because the Giants have none whatsoever. Osi Umenyiora is getting double-teamed because he's the only threat of a pass rush with Croy Bierman out. And Asante Samuel is a shell of his former self. They really missed Dante Robinson in the secondary. They really miss the kid that was the safety that left for free agency at the end of the year. They're in very bad shape with their defense.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's amazing too, because OC Umenyiora looked like it was the most motivated I've seen him play in about 3 years when I watched him on Monday night. You would really hope that right now the way the Falcons, the Giants, and the Steelers are the parody of the NFL, of being able to play so well for so long, and then the year that you start talking about this is our year to go to the Super Bowl, they have a total of one win between the three teams. So the Steelers, the Giants, and the Falcons are really struggling, really struggling. And you also, by the way, did we just contract Jacksonville at this point? Do we just put an automatic win for season? I want to look up Jacksonville's schedule at this point and see if they have the possibility of a win. Because
In the beginning of the season, I went through their schedule, and the only game that I thought that they had a chance to win was the Oakland game, which Oakland won earlier in the year.
19-9. They lost 19-9. Yeah.
Right. I completely see Jacksonville going 0-16 this year. And then they have the daunting task of whether or not they go with Jadeveon Clowney from South Carolina, who is the by far and away projected number one overall player in all of college football, who is making himself look real bad with the way that he's approaching his senior year at South Carolina. He's a defensive end, just the most physically gifted athlete on defense. There, a number of scouts have said that they've ever seen. He's a game changer when he's on the field. Do they go with someone like that, or do they go with Teddy Bridgewater, the quarterback out of Louisville, who is everyone's number one rated quarterback? The thing with this upcoming draft class is that it is quarterback deep. There's going to be six or seven quarterbacks in this draft. I'm not saying they're all going to be in the first round. There's going to be six or seven quarterbacks that are eventual starters. I love the quarterback class for this year's draft. So do they take a Clowney and maybe go quarterback in the second round, or do they go with the top overall quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater? Because I really see Jacksonville being the only team that's going to go winless. I do not see the Giants going winless. I do not see Pittsburgh, and I do not see Tampa Bay all going without a win. So Jacksonville's on the clock.
Well, I will tell you that the you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars schedule, they have Denver this week, San Diego next week, San Francisco. Then they have a bye week, Tennessee, Arizona, Houston, Cleveland, Houston again, Buffalo, Tennessee, and then Indianapolis. So there's a very good chance they might go over. I think if they're going to get a win, it's either Arizona or Buffalo.
Yeah, where is the Buffalo game being played?
That's home for them.
Home for the Jaguars. So that may be the only one that you're looking at, because Buffalo is a real good home team and not a very good road team. But I just don't see, especially the way Buffalo played Cleveland in Cleveland. And Cleveland is a pretty good team. Cleveland, as of right now, they lead the AFC North. The Cleveland Browns lead the AFC North, and the Giants are 0-5.
Yeah, it's a backwards world right now. Listen, I want to throw something else at you before we have Louis Musto join us here. The Jets are playing the Steelers this weekend at MetLife. This could be, after a great win on Monday night against Atlanta, this could be a trap game for the Jets. The Jets might be pounding their chest right now about how well they're doing, and Pittsburgh might come in here and steal a win. They still have Roethlisberger. They still have Mike Tomlin is a very good coach. I don't sleep on this game if I'm the New York Jets. I think the Steelers are starting to get hungry. They really need a win. They're desperate too. I can picture the Jets, looking past the Steelers at this point. Because after the Steelers, you know who the Jets have, right?
I believe it's the New Orleans Saints.
No, they're home for the New England Patriots.
Oh, the Patriots. Then the Saints, I believe.
It's the Patriots, the Bengals, then the Saints. So now you're getting into the meat and potatoes part of that schedule. And it's a real difficult schedule. So
it's very possible that the 3-2 Jets are 3-5 in 3 weeks.
I don't want to guarantee anything. There's nothing in life that's guaranteed. But
death and taxes.
Death and taxes is correct, yes. I think you're looking at a 3-5 Jet team at that point in time, because those are three. You have to look at it as if the Jets defense is really that good, they'll be able to shut down Tom Brady, shut down Drew Brees. I want to say shut down Andy Dalton, but I think that win that they had on Sunday against the New England Patriots, that should have been a lot worse. So Dalton and company basically, they dropped
the ball. That Cincinnati defense is real good. The Cincinnati Bengals defense is real good. It may be the most underrated defense in all football.
I agree that the Cincinnati defense is probably one of the best defenses in football, but so is the Jets. It's going to be very interesting to see if the Jets defense will be able to put points up against the Bengals defense, and then vice versa. It's going to be very interesting. Like, we don't know what Geno Smith is. I'm not convinced of what Geno Smith is. In my eyes, he's still a rookie quarterback in the NFL who still has to prove himself and show consistency. The thing with Mark Sanchez, the competition between him and Mark Sanchez is officially over. It's his job now to lose, unless you give it to Mr. Sims, who's sitting there making sure that clipboard is nice and warm for him. So Geno Smith now has the job. It's his job now. He's a rookie quarterback in the NFL. Can that offense rally around him? This is a question we can also ask our good friend. Ryan, did you want to come in before Lewis joins us?
One comment is that the Rex Ryan, for as much heat as he takes, and some of it is well-deserved, the guy can coach defense. There's no doubt about it. He schemes his defenses around the talent that he has. He gets the most out of his defensive players, and depending on what he gets out of the skill players on offense is going to determine whether or not he keeps his job in come season's end. Because I really feel, especially with the new regime, with John Idzik coming in, I do think in order for Rex to keep his job, he has to make the playoffs.
I'll go with that too. Now let's welcome in a good friend of our show's, Lou Musto. He works with Sports Journey, Cover 32. He's also contributing over to SNY. Lou, good evening, my friend.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on, guys.
No problem. You have Randy Zelli and Ryan Stern here, Real Sports Talk Radio. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us tonight. Let's start with the 0-5 Giants. Lou, what have you seen over the last couple weeks? And it's a long list of things that you know the Giants can improve on at this point.
I've seen a lot of ugly football, just poor execution, poor decision-making, poor talent overall, poor coaching, everything right now with the Giants is just awful. And it's kind of baffling to see because while they do have some holes, they have a lot of talent. You know, they certainly don't have the talent to be the best team in the NFL, but they certainly have the talent to be the best team in the NFC East. And even as awful as that division's been, they're not even that.
The real major issue for me for the New York Giants has been the offensive line. I know that they've been decimated with injuries. I know Chris Snee is out for the year. David Boss has been battling injuries. David Deal just got back. And then Will Beatty may be the most overpaid left tackle in all of football. If the Giants end up with one of the top three picks, do you see them trying to revamp that offensive line come next year, or do you think they look somewhere else?
I would hope if they have a top five pick somewhere in there that they would look to improve the offensive line, specifically left tackle. Clearly, Will Beatty cannot handle the job, and despite the fact that they're going to be paying him big money, they might benefit best by moving him to the right side and maybe looking into somebody like a Jake Matthews from Texas A&M to go on the left side and move Pugh to guard. But I'm not sure that would be Jerry Reese's mode of operation.
What about Pugh to center? Because I know his first year as a starter with Syracuse, he played center. And, I mean, right now you or I could play better than David Boss has been playing.
And Jim Cordell.
Right.
That's an interesting thought. That's something I actually haven't even considered, him moving to center. I guess you assume he'd play one of the outside offensive line positions. But center would be an interesting move for Pugh. I still want to see what he can do with tackle. I think you got to give him more time. But if they have a top five pick, I think they have to go offensive tackle with somebody like Jake Matthews. I don't know if Jerry Reese would. I just don't know if it's his MO. You know, we joke about him and his obsession with receivers and defensive ends, but if Clowney's there, who says he won't take him, you know?
Right. I think if Clowney is available, he's the perfect fit for the Giants, even though I do feel Jake Matthews would look really good in blue.
Oh, absolutely. Clowney would be a good fit anywhere, I think.
Now, Lou, I do have to bring up the running back situation. It seems like it's by committee now. David Wilson injured, probably out tomorrow night. I think they did rule him out. Brandon Jacobs, Darrell Scott, Is there anybody else out there that they feel that they can bring in who can adjust to the system quickly and possibly help this failing running game?
Unfortunately, I don't think there is. There's certainly not somebody that comes off the top of my head that the Giants haven't already looked at. Right now, they're pretty much stuck with Brandon Jacobs and Jarrell Scott, and they got to hope something comes out of it. And without any blocking up front, that's going to be really difficult because neither player is anything spectacular, but without an offensive line, they're really not going to be able to do much. I would like to see Michael Cox, the rookie, I'd like to see him get some more opportunities or any opportunities with the football in his hands to see what he could do because he looked good in preseason, and yeah, it's preseason, but at this point, what do they have to lose?
I agree with you on that. We did talk about the name of Michael Turner, who's out there sitting not without a team right now, but the concern with Michael Turner is he's not a big enough back to start blocking. So that was the main concern with the Giants with bringing in Michael Turner. The funny thing is you watch Cleveland and what Willis McGahee is doing with them, he would have been a great option for the Giants, but they passed on him and went back with Brandon Jacobs because Jacobs knows the system and also has better blocking ability than McGahee. So now, coming up now, the Giants schedule, you have Chicago this week, and I believe
Minnesota.
They have Minnesota the following week. Two wins, they're back in this really weak division race. We had a Jose, who's not on with us tonight, had a discussion about this might be the first season where possibility a 6-10 team can win the division. Your thoughts on that?
I don't know about a 6-10 team winning the division, but I can certainly see 7-9 at this point. The Giants, I'd like to say they're in the race, but from what they've shown me, I don't think even being two games out, they have any shot. If they come out this Thursday, if they come out tomorrow night and really show me something, I'll be surprised. You got to worry about turnovers with the Bears. So the Giants could be looking at 0-6. The Vikings could run all over them with Adrian Peterson. You could be looking at 0-7. And I don't think the Giants are winning 7 or 8 games after that. The Cowboys, in my opinion, are the best team in the division. Despite the fact that they're 2-3, as are the Eagles, I think from what I've seen of them and of the Eagles and of the Redskins and of the Giants, right now the Cowboys are definitely head and shoulders above all three of those teams. So even if they go 7-9, I think I could see them getting away with the division.
Now, one issue that sparked a little debate, especially within a couple people that I talked to who are very familiar with the Giants, was the decision to not go for the fourth and half a yard when in Kansas City after originally the 17-yard pass to Victor Cruz was ruled a first down. It was reviewed. They were a half yard short. At that point, you're sitting there, you're 0-3, and you're still in a winnable game. Did you, at the time that the play happened, did you agree with Coughlin's decision to punt?
I did not agree with his decision to punt. I think with where they are and just the situation that they've started this season in, I think they really needed the momentum if they were able to get that first down, and it would have been just picked up everything off their shoulders, in my opinion, if they were able to get that first down. But they didn't take the chance, and it backfired, obviously. And here they are, 0-5 now, two games later, looking for something, anything, to just revive this season. Before it's even begun, they're already a mess. I would have gone for it on fourth down. I think it would have been the right choice to make with how they've started this season. But that's just how Coughlin and Gilbride, they're very conservative. They're very conservative. They don't take too many chances for, you know, anything outside what they usually do. And I think that's part of the problem is they're so predictable and they depend on what they've found to be so reliable in the past. But this season's showing that you're going to have to make some changes. You have to adapt to this game because clearly opposing defenses are onto you. That would have been a good place to start.
Are we going to see Coughlin experiment at all at the quarterback position if this thing totally bombs out now with Eli? Would he start playing Panther and or Nazib out there?
I don't think there's any chance he'll quit on Eli Manning. I don't think it matters the situation. I don't think he'd quit on Eli. If they're getting blown out late in the fourth quarter, I think you could see Painter and Acid, but he's not going to quit on Eli, and I think it'd be a really bad sign. I think it'd be a really bad statement if he did.
If okay, this season continues, if this season continues to go downhill, not that it's already at the bottom of the hill, but if it continues to struggle the way that it has, do you see Tom Coughlin walking away at the end of the year, or do you think that he comes back to try and prove himself, not that he has anything to prove, does he walk away a two-time Super Bowl winner?
Well, to be honest, I was kind of skeptical that he would return after the season before this whole debacle of a year began. But with the way things have been going, and if the Giants continue on this slide, if they don't show anything at all, if it doesn't seem like Coughlin makes any improvements with the team, I think you might see something where the Giants and the Mara family come to some kind of mutual agreement for him to walk away, just hang him up. Not that they want to not that they would want to fire him. I don't think that's something the Mara family would do, but I think for the best of the franchise, it would be in their best interest maybe for Coughlin to go, at the very least for his coordinators to go.
And I do know somebody who works over at the CBS pregame show who is chomping at the bit to become the next Giants head coach.
Who can that be?
I know a lot of Giants fans that would love that too.
Who can that be? I have no clue.
His name rhymes with Schmil Schmauer.
Oh, okay, I got you. I got it now. Lewis, you know, the other big thing that I've been harping on is if the Coughlin era does come to an end at the end of this year, and Eli Manning, you know, you have a situation where the two, you know, are so mentioned in the same sentence, you know, Manning and Coughlin. Would you? And this is, everyone calls me crazy for even thinking this way, but Manning's 31 years old, and if you want to start building for the future, do you move Eli? Do you move him to see if you can get something for him, some value for him, and start chasing after a young quarterback and start rebuilding?
It's so hard to find a good quarterback in the NFL. Having one already, I think it'd be a little crazy to get rid of him, to part with him, especially when he's brought two Super Bowls to the town. You know, he is the figurehead of the franchise. To get rid of him, I think, would be a little crazy. I understand where you're headed with it, but I don't think the Giants are in a situation where they need to completely tear down and rebuild. There are just a number of improvements that need to be made, and that really encompasses the entire team. But they have a lot of talent where a couple additions can make a big difference. I don't think you'll ever see Eli Manning in a different jersey. Of course, people probably said that about Peyton Manning. So I won't rule it out, but I wouldn't count on it.
I figured it was at least an idea to discuss, because you have to look at every option on the table. There are teams that decide they want to wipe the slate clean, you know, and that happens. There has to be a certain point where you say, you know, I know in the NBA, and that's where I do a lot of my coverage, there's a point where you have to just sort of cut ties with a guy and try and get some value from him while he still has some value. So, you know, that's always the attitude to take. Real quick, predictions for this upcoming week. Let's start with the Thursday game, Giants at Chicago.
I think offensively it's going to be a pretty ugly game, although Giants and Bears games tend to be pretty ugly offensively anyway.
Yeah.
It's really tough to pinpoint which way this one could go, because it kind of depends on which version of both teams shows up. The Bears have lost two straight. The Giants have obviously lost five straight. There have been moments where the Giants have looked good. There have been a lot of moments where they've looked bad. The Bears have looked equally as bad in the last two games, although they have put up a fight much more than the Giants have towards the end of games. Going to Soldier Field, it's probably going to be pretty cold. And knowing how much they are, how good they are forcing turnovers, I think Eli Manning is in for a lot of trouble. I don't think the Bears will blow them out, but I think it's going to be a really ugly loss. I won't give you a score prediction. I hate doing that, but I think the Giants are going to go 0-6.
And I'm with you on that. And real quick, I'm going to name, give you just some of the big games of the weekend. There's no reason to go over the whole schedule. But we'll stay local first and go with the Pittsburgh and the Jets. You heard me say it before, I think this might be a trap game for the Jets. I think they're pounding their chest after Monday's win. I think this is a game that they can really look past because they have New England the following week. Jets-Steelers, I would love to get your view.
I agree. This is definitely a game they could look past. You know, they're feeling pretty high and mighty after beating a good Falcons team that's struggling in the same way the Giants are. Unfortunately, they're playing a really bad Steelers team that I don't think is going to be able to pull the upset, so I'm going to say the Jets.
Okay. What about the Green Bay Packers at the defending world champion Baltimore Ravens?
That should be a good game. That should be an interesting game to watch. The Ravens are another team that they haven't impressed me much. And both teams need a win. I'm going to say Green Bay.
Okay. The 425 game, the New Orleans Saints at the New England Patriots.
Both teams look outstanding. Both offenses look good. Both defenses look surprisingly good. That's going to be a good game to watch. So I would recommend most people do watch that over whatever else is on at 425. The Saints are 5-0.
Yeah.
I think the Patriots are 4-1, right?
Yep.
Yes.
I'll say the Patriots are going to take that. Close game, high-scoring game, the same way the Cowboys and Broncos were, but I'll say Patriots.
I think the return of Rob Gronkowski is really going to help puzzle pieces fit into place for the Patriots offense.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's going to be just additional firepower that Tom Brady doesn't need. Although last week's game was pretty ugly, so maybe he does need it.
Yeah, last week Tom Brady's first game in 52 games. He didn't throw a touchdown pass. Absolutely amazing. You know, that's a huge stat. People don't realize on how impressive that stat really is. That's a huge, huge stat. And real quick, last game of one that I find of interest. Sorry to cut you off before, Ryan. Is San Diego's played better this year than they have last year? Looks like Antonio Gates has sort of found his rhythm again. Indy at San Diego. Andrew Luck is turning out to be a real special type of player. And if you haven't watched the Colts yet, definitely take the opportunity to. Lewis, your view on the Colts, San Diego?
Both teams are very, very good teams this year. They're both very well coached. Their offenses are high-powered. Their defenses are strong. I'm not a believer in Philip Rivers, but I am a believer in Andrew Luck, and I think the kid is going to be outstanding. I think, ironically, and as the comparison has been, he will be the second coming of Peyton Manning. He already looks like it. And that win last week against the Seahawks was really a statement, and I think he's going to come out and make another one against San Diego. So I'm going to say the Colts.
All right, Lewis, real quick, let's find out where you are. What are you working on right now, and where can people find you if they need to find you?
If you want to find me, if you want to find my work, you can follow me on Twitter at Lewis Musto. That's LouisMusto. I'm writing for Sports Journey. I'm the managing editor at Cover 32, which is a new site doing a lot of good things covering the NFL. I definitely recommend you check that out. I contribute to SNY. I do a whole lot of things. I'm everywhere and anywhere. If you don't come upon my name, I must be doing something wrong.
And now, Lewis, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Because coming up when the NBA season starts coming around, right now we're preseason, but we're going to have a new show called NBA 3 in the Key here on the Back Sports Page Radio Network. And I know that you're credentialed to go do the NBA as well. Will you be coming on that show with me to talk a little hoops?
Absolutely, I would love to.
All right,
that would
excellent.
Be great. I would love to talk some hoops.
All right, excellent. All right, Lewis, hopefully, did you put in for the Vikings game, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yes, I have been for the Vikings.
All right, so hopefully you and I will be sitting there and discussing more of this in the press box at the Vikings-Giants game in 2 weeks. Ryan's going to be our man in the field and running around for us on that game. Lewis, thanks very much for a few minutes. I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some of your time. Good stuff as always. We'll definitely be in contact soon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks, Lewis.
Take care.
A lot to digest there as far as the Giants are concerned there, Ryan. I don't think there's any real quick fix to this. This is not something where you, it's not like, you know, the theory we used on your show 2 weeks ago, where we said the Giants and the Steelers are like a boat and it has cracks in it. You keep filling the cracks with little, like glue and gum, and sooner or later it's going to break. I think both of these teams have officially broken, and now they have to put the pieces back together and rebuild the boat. I think the Giants have too much work to do on that boat right now. It's as crazy as that sounds. They have way too much work to do on that boat.
The one major similarity that we are seeing between the struggles of the Giants and the Steelers is the offensive line. Pittsburgh, going into the season, I felt had only two NFL starting quality players, and that was Marquise Pouncey and David DeCastro. And unfortunately for the Pittsburgh Steelers, in Game 2, David DeCastro rolled up on Marquise Pouncey and tore up his knee, and Marquise Pouncey is out for the year. So now the Steelers have one player on the offensive line I believe is a true NFL starter. The Giants, I think that Justin Pugh has all the makings of being a pretty good offensive lineman. Maybe not a great one. I think he can be a pretty good one. Will Beatty, he is suited to play right tackle. He is not equipped to take on the top right defensive ends in the National Football League who are coming after the blind side of the quarterback. He's just not equipped to do that. And the Giants are paying him among one of the top left tackles in the league. And I questioned the signing as soon as it happened. And the Giants are really making me look good on my questioning, because Will Beatty, it's frustrating to watch him get beat time and time again. And it's either a sack or he has to hold somebody in order for them to not clobber Eli Manning.
I'll be honest with you, Ryan. I've watched a lot. Here's what I've watched so far. I've watched the Giants go toe-to-toe with the Cowboys and almost win after committing 6 turnovers. I've watched them get their keystones handed to them by Denver and Carolina. I've watched one challenge play by Andy Reid derail a game that the Giants were in Kansas City. And then I watched this past weekend a team meltdown in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line, when they took a 2-point lead. This Giants team, this is obviously not the same team that got on a roll 2 years ago. They've lost a lot of key players, and I also think they lost their confidence. And I think they felt it was going to be like a light switch. We were looking forward for the preseason ending to start the regular season. And the one consistency so far this season for the New York Football Giants is that Eli Manning has been a turnover machine. That's been the one consistency. 12 turnovers in the first 5 games is unacceptable for a
Absolutely.
Super Bowl winning quarterback.
It absolutely is, and I'm not saying that any other quarterback wouldn't do the same thing, but there's only so much a quarterback can do when he has the lack of protection in front of him. And even look at one of the interceptions from last week. Eli Manning got clobbered in the head, and at the same time that he got hit in the head, one of his offensive linemen got pushed back into his lap. Eli Manning's hand hits his offensive lineman's helmet. The ball goes straight up in the air and gets picked. That isn't on Eli Manning. And there's been enough turnovers this year that are not on Eli Manning that Eli Manning is getting blamed for. And yeah, the numbers do speak for themselves. There are, you look at someone like Peyton, who he doesn't have he lost his left tackle and he lost his center, but the way that Peyton gets rid of the ball is far and above the way that Eli gets rid of the ball. Peyton's decision making is what makes him the much better quarterback. Eli needs to be a better decision maker, but there are only so many decisions you can make when defensive linemen are in your laps 12 times a game.
Brian, I ask you this very, very important question. The Giants' record at the end of the season will be
3-13.
You think so, huh?
Unfortunately, I just don't see it getting any better. I mean, well, three wins is getting better. I just don't see. Before the Philly game last week, I thought that they had a chance to turn it around. I thought that they had enough offensive weapons to keep up with Philly based on what the Eagles have shown in their secondary. When the Giants did enough early on to keep themselves in the game, they had two leads in the game. Unfortunately, what really hurt them, again, was the offensive line and their absolute decimation of injuries in their secondary. They had three healthy cornerbacks dressed for the game. And when you're going up against a team who puts out as many weapons as the Philadelphia Eagles do, three healthy cornerbacks isn't going to stop them. Unless they show signs of getting better, I really see that this being a three-win team from here on out.
My prediction, and then we're going to move on to another topic. My prediction at this point, Giants are going to probably go 4-12. I think they're going to get they're going to get four wins. This team needs a rebuild. This team really needs a rebuild. You just have to decide whether you want to rebuild it around Eli Manning, Victor Cruz. The one topic we didn't even get to talk about with Lewis, and it was talked about a lot today, is whether you trade Hakeem Nicks.
I was just going to ask you that same exact question.
Yeah, do you trade Hakeem Nicks? I'm on the fence about it because he is a dynamic receiver, but the problem is his health is awful. He's been so banged up and so beat up, and you just really wonder if it's really worth giving him that type of money. Victor Cruz is a dynamic receiver, but he's still just a slot receiver, and I feel that they overpaid.
I do not like the way that a lot of people in the media put this label on Victor Cruz that he's a slot receiver. Victor Cruz does more than just a slot. Granted, when the Giants have three wide receivers on the field, he's the one that's in the slot. But when there's two wide receivers on the field, he's there. He's out on the outside. I really think that's why there was the whole contract dispute earlier preseason or during training camp. And that was because a lot of media and a lot of people within the team may view him as a slot receiver. I think he's more than a slot receiver. I think he's a wide receiver that you can build a team around.
All right, final prediction here, NFC East winner.
The Dallas Cowboys.
Well, doesn't it hurt you to say it?
Oh, it kills me. But as much as it kills me, I look at the way that they played against the Denver Broncos. And it takes a special team to be able to go toe-to-toe with the machine that is the Denver Broncos. And as much as I am a Cowboy hater, as much as I am a Tony Romo hater, I think it's absolutely wrong that Tony Romo is getting blamed for the loss because of the interception late in the game. Yeah, it always seems to happen with Tony Romo that in the big spot, he throws the big pick. But they aren't even anywhere close to being in that game if it isn't for Tony Romo and his performance throughout the rest of the game.
I just want to let you know I am on Twitter as we speak, and the next game has just started on the MSG Network. So if you're listening, if you're a Knicks fan and you're listening, go to MSG after our show and watch the game. Notice I didn't say right now. After our show, go to the game and check it out. But Mark Berman, who covers the Knicks for the Post, made a great comment here. First play of Andreas Barniami, who just got traded to the Knicks this past offseason. First play by Barniami as a Knicks in charge. Nice trade. The Knicks writers of sarcasm is amazing. Frank Iasola, Mark Berman, and Al Iasoni, who covered the Knicks respectively for the Post, the Daily News, and Newsday. If you ever want to be entertained during a Knicks game, watch this. You know, go on Twitter and they're great of just being sarcastic through this. All right, let's break into the NHL. Yes, I just said the NHL on Real Sports Talk Radio. We have our hockey guy, Ryan Stern, here. Scooter, give us a quick update on the New York Rangers. Let's also make you grind your teeth and also talk about the New Jersey Devils. What's going on with the Rangers?
Well, so far I'm going to call them the New York Bipolar Rangers. They looked absolutely awful in the preseason. They were 1-5 in the preseason. They weren't able to consistently score. They weren't able to consistently put pressure on opposing teams in the offensive zone. And then they go and in game one lose 4-1 to a not great Phoenix Coyote team. Game two, they go into Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles Kings are one of the better teams in the league, and they're an even better home team. They may be one of the top two or three home teams in all of the NHL, and the Rangers dominate the game. The Rangers win 3-1 in dominating fashion. And then they go into San Jose and run into they may be the Denver Broncos of the NHL. And by that, I mean they're going to put up tons of offense. And you never know what you're going to get in the playoffs. The Sharks are always one of the top teams in the regular season and can't seem to make that extra step in the playoffs. The Sharks have now, they're 3-0, and they've won their games 4-1, 4-1, and 9-2. Thomas Hertl, the rookie for San Jose, scores four goals, including a Marek Milik-esque between-the-legs goal over Marty Biron's shoulder. It was the crowning, the icing on the cake in a 9-2 victory over the Rangers. And it's going to take some time for this Ranger team to start gelling into the new system. I do think it will eventually come, but I think especially opening 9 games on the road because of the renovations that are being done to Madison Square Garden, it's going to hurt. A 9-game road trip is never easy, especially to start a season. I think if the Rangers are optimistic, if you can get 4 wins on the road trip, I think they're happy. If they come home 4-5, I think they're happy, and then they start because they have two long home stands coming up in the first 3 months. So I think they'll be able to right the ship, but the new system under Alain Vigneault isn't at the point that it needs to be at yet.
So what about the New Jersey Devils?
The New Jersey Devils, they miss the ability of Ilya Kovalchuk to finish games out. If there was one thing that Ilya Kovalchuk did was he played 60 minutes of hockey. The Devils now have, in three games in a row, had leads in the third period. Yesterday was in the second period. But they've had multiple goal leads slip away and have lost three in a row in the shootout. So they have been able to get a point in each of the games, and that's another spot where they're missing Kovalchuk. The Devils don't have anybody who's been able to put the puck in the net in the shootout, especially the way Ilya Kovalchuk was. Martin Brodeur is looking his age. He hasn't played well, and I do think that the acquisition of Corey Schneider was a smart decision. They did give up the 9th overall pick in the draft, and even though the NHL draft is a much bigger crapshoot than the NFL draft, it's still the 9th overall pick, and it was a hefty price, but Corey Schneider is still young. He's going to be able to learn from Brodeur this year, and I think that he'll be he's the goalie of the future for the Devils.
All right, Ryan, I also want to throw this at you before we really keep going. Let's talk a little fantasy football real quick. How are you doing in all of your leagues?
I am... Let's see. I'm in five leagues. I'm over 500 in four of the five. The one that I'm under 500, I'm waiting for guys to get healthy. My early picks haven't been hitting. I drafted C.J. Spiller, Stephen Ridley, Stephen Jackson, 1, 2, 3. And going into the year, I'm like, all right, I got this league locked up. And they've all been trash. But in the Back Sports Page League, I'd like to note who is atop the standings once again. With a 4-1 record, including a victory over one host of Real Sports Talk Radio. the big thing with fantasy football this year, all the talk going into the year was going to be about the running backs. You had to go out and get the running back early because of the lack of depth throughout the NFL and the different schemes that just don't utilize the running back as well. You got to go out and get that big running back. And unless you are an Adrian Peterson owner, a LeSean McCoy owner, probably the third most impressive running back so far this year has probably been Danny Woodhead from San Diego.
Danny Woodhead, a guy who they said wouldn't do anything, is the third best player. Go figure.
Yeah, and it's funny because in my biggest league that I'm in, I have Alfred Morris, Darren Sproles, and Danny Woodhead. I just traded Stephen Ridley, who's been nothing this year. I traded him for Harry Douglas, who's now going to be the number one target with Julio Jones out for the year, and who knows when Roddy White's going to show up again. He's now the number one target in Atlanta with a real good quarterback in Matt Ryan, so I really like my situation in that league.
Yeah, I would too. I'm in two leagues. I'm in the Back Sports Page league that you can, you know, that we battle on every single week. I'm doing shockingly well. The win this week?
Well, whenever you have Peyton Manning on your team is normally going to be doing well.
Why do you have to go that route, man?
I'm praising you for picking Peyton Manning, because I was one of those guys who was, and with our league, it's a two quarterback league, so it's different than your standard league. But I'm one of those guys who I waited on a quarterback in any league that I could, because I thought that getting someone that was middle of the road, like Tony Romo, a Matt Stafford, a Matt Ryan, waiting a couple rounds on a quarterback to get one of those guys would be more beneficial than taking an Aaron Rodgers, a Drew Brees, a Peyton Manning so much earlier, so you could build your depth elsewhere. But Peyton Manning has made all of those people risky enough to take the quarterback early. He's paid off in dividends.
Well, in one of my leagues, I have three quarterbacks. I have Flacco, Russell Wilson, and Colin Kaepernick. Who would you go with?
this week, I think it is of the trio that you have, I think Russell Wilson is the best start.
I agree, and
especially may even going down going throughout the year for the rest of the year, especially if they get Percy Harvin back, and it looks like he may be coming back sooner rather than later. Giving that team an extra weapon in the passing game is only going to make Russell Wilson better. And Russell Wilson, especially last week, was able to help you out with his legs. He had his first 100-yard rushing game of his career.
Ryan, real quick, I don't know, are you a Madden guy?
I am a Madden guy.
Okay, can you give us the difference between the 13 and the 14?
Visually, no. Controls, yes.
Okay.
I like the new left trigger moves that you can make, the impact moves, as they call them. I like those, and I love the addition of, or the enhancement of, the read option. I love using the San Francisco 49ers in the game because I think Colin Kaepernick runs the best read option in the game. But I also did create myself as a speed quarterback, which we all know that's how I'm built.
Nice. All right, Ryan, I know you said you wanted to I don't know if you want to stay with us for a minute, but we're going to jump into a little NBA preseason here. I know that's not your specialty, but it certainly is mine.
Yeah, Ryan's actually going to take off. He got a little daddy duty that he has to take care of. The little one's got to go to bed in a few minutes, so got to make sure to tuck the little one in.
Okay, real quick, just reaction to Joe Girardi re-signing with the Yankees.
Not shocked. I knew that if the Yankees wanted to keep him, they had to sign him before the Chicago Cubs were legally able to talk to him, because the Chicago Cubs had come out and said that they would top any offer that was put out for Joe Girardi. I'm not shocked. I think management loves the way that he runs his team and the way that he gets his players to play for him. And if the one thing that the Yankees don't have to worry about is the coach's salary does not go against the 189 cap.
Thank God. We were all really worried about that.
Well, I mean... the Hank and Hal have said that they're going to be under 189 next year. And with Robinson Cano coming out and saying that he wants $30 million a year, he may price himself out of the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think he's worth that money.
Oh, no.
I don't think he's worth the money, to be honest with you, but that's just how I am.
When I think of a $30 million player, I think of someone who is going to show it every day on the field. And I know part of his thing is that sometimes he's so smooth that he makes it look easy. But there are times that Robinson Cano is lazy. And it doesn't look like he is hustling at all. And that's something that you really want from a player that you're paying $30 million a year for. You want to see the effort. And even if for someone like Robinson Cano, it may come easier than it does for other people. There are other people in the league I'd rather give $30 million to than Robinson Cano.
All right, Ryan, it is 8 o'clock. You know what time it is?
It's Harper's bedtime.
Well, besides Harper's bedtime, it's now time for a Monday morning hangover, fantasy football advice for week 5. Ryan, we'll see you Sunday, Beyond the Benches.
Yes, we're going to be discussing, we're going to be recapping some Giants football, working on some guests. We may be talking with Paul Dottino from WFAN, who covers the Giants, and someone from Giants101.com. And we will be previewing the rest of Week 6 and get into some MLB Championship Series talk. So make sure you tune in Sunday, 11 o'clock Eastern Time, to be on the bench.
All right. Right now, let's hear from Anthony Mulliville with the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Update of the Week here on Real Sports Talk Radio.
This is Anthony Mulvihill, host of the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, which airs every Thursday night at 7 p.m. and is brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. I'm here to give you the fantasy follow-up for Week 5 and a look ahead to your Week 6 matchup, so listen up in order to win this weekend's games. First off, I just want to take a second to mourn with Calvin Johnson owners who were smitten with the first big injury shock of the fantasy season. A last-minute knee injury had owners scrambling for a replacement right before the 1 o'clock games. Two guys who would have been more than adequate replacements, T.Y. Hilton and Alshon Jeffrey, both of whom had career games. Hilton caught 5 balls for 140 yards and 2 touchdowns, while Jeffrey caught 10 for 218 in a TD. Both guys should be every week starters and could stay in wide receiver 2 territory for the remainder of the season. Those two could definitely come in handy with the Falcons on a Week 6 bye. Roddy White is a great buy-low candidate, as the 2 weeks of rest should be just enough to put him at full strength when he returns. The Dolphins join the Falcons on a light bye week, where we only lose 2 teams without too much fantasy production. Second shocking piece of injury news. Julio Jones, done for the remainder of the season with a foot injury. Huge blow to all owners. He was the leader in catches and second in yards. Impossible to replace Julio, but a few guys who could be available in your leagues: Harry Douglas from Atlanta, Terrence Williams from Dallas, Chris Durham from Detroit, and Keenan Allen from San Diego. My plays of the week: after touting him all season long, this is the week where Doug Martin fully breaks out and shows you why you use a top 2 pick on him. I mean, come on. Even David Wilson had a touchdown against this Eagles defense. My sleeper play of the week: Monty Ball in Denver. Do I believe in Monty Ball? Not in the least. Vegas had the opening spread at 28 points, and it doesn't take a betting guru to know that this game is going to be a blowout. Denver's going to give a look to their young running back, want to give him some confidence in this dream matchup for the entire Broncos backfield, even Ronnie Hillman. Lastly, buy low on the entire Patriots offense. With Gronkowski set to return this week, the entire offense will begin to click again, and these guys can be had at a discount price right now. Another deep sleeper: with 2 tight ends out on a bye this week, Garrett Graham from Houston becomes a nice fill-in play with Owen Daniels injured. My benching of the week: Anquan Boldin going against Patrick Peterson and the 49ers. Boldin's the type of wide receiver who doesn't need to be open to make a play on a ball. However, Patrick Peterson is one of the more athletic ball hawks in the league and won't be pushed around on jump balls. Boldin and the entire 49ers offense will have a tough time against a very underrated Arizona defense in San Fran this week. Also, try to avoid the entire Buffalo offense this week. Even C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson can be replaced. The whole unit takes a major hit with Thad Lewis, a practice squad player of a week ago, starting as the quarterback for the struggling team in Week 6. This is Anthony Mulvihill with your Week 6 Fantasy Follow-Up, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com and the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, airing on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure to tune in and follow us on Facebook to send in all your questions. Thanks for listening, and best of luck in your games this weekend. Take it to the house.
All right, don't forget Monday Morning Hangover every Thursday night here on the Real, on the Back Sports Page Radio Network, and you can hear his fantasy football updates every week here on Real Sports Talk Radio. Of course, if you're just joining in now, my name is Randy Zellia. You can follow me on Twitter at RandyBSP and go to Real Sports Talk Radio on Facebook, BackSportsPage.com. And Ryan Stern has departed for the evening. And now welcome back the living legend himself, the one and only, Karen Castro. Mr. Castro, welcome back to Real Sports Talk Radio.
How you doing, buddy? Thanks for having me again.
No problem. This time, you know, last week we had a little bit of technical issues. We had a hard time with some feedback. But you know what? I hear you clear now. So 0-5, my friend. 0-5. It was a good portion of the first half of the show. We were talking New York Giants football. I know you're a big Giants fan, but let's hear your take on us. And then we have some other business we have to discuss with you on the line.
Okay, great. Well, listen, as a Giant fan, as I said last week, I never would have thought that they would be 0-5. If someone would have said that to me in the beginning of the year, I would have laughed in their face. But listen, you can't be good all the time, and sometimes you just have to go through one of these seasons. It's still, you know, relatively early. They could still win some games. I don't think they're going to be 0-16, as some people have some people think. But the bottom line is, on the offensive side, right now everyone is just attacking Eli Manning. He's got 12 interceptions. I understand that, but it's not completely his fault. Has some of his throws been a little errant? Some of them have, but some of them haven't been his fault either. Some of them where the receivers haven't been on the same page, and he's under duress too. You got to look at the whole team at this point. I know he has the worst quarterback rating in the league right now, but it's not just him. A little more about Eli. I've even heard people saying they should, if they fall really far down and they start to have a very high draft pick, think about drafting Teddy Bridgewater. And I think, for me at least, I would not do that. You still have Eli Manning there. Obviously, the season's not over. I hate talking about the off season, but in the off season, you know, the Giants will have to have plenty of holes to fill. But there's no way I'm giving up Eli Manning. Right now, his offensive line is bruised and battered. The left side is fine with Booth and B. In the middle, you have a guy that's, I think, only started two games now, Jim Cordle. You got you have Pugh, the rookie. And then Deal is back. And actually, the line played a little better last week against the Eagles. So that's a little encouraging that you have Deal back and you really only have now two guys instead of the week before when you had Brewer start. And, you know, combined starts, I believe, was about five. The defense, unfortunately, right now, my friend Randy, as I said last week, the formula of the Giants worked for a lot of number of years. You had a secondary that was average. Linebackers that can, you know, just get by, that were not really great. The first Super Bowl, they had Antonio Pierce, so they had some, you know, they did have a name there. In 2011, you had a Michael Bowley and Kevin Ukos playing linebacker, but the linebackers pretty much really don't have a lot of experience, and they were going by the rush. And unfortunately, they are not getting any pass rush, the Giants, which is really just making them vulnerable in so many areas at linebacker and at corner and at cornerback and safety in the secondary. So, as a Giant fan, I'm looking forward to them playing tomorrow night, and I think they probably are too. Get that bad taste out of their mouth in Philly. It's funny, they had a chance to win that game again, and unfortunately, they just couldn't capitalize with the turnovers in the fourth quarter. But I'm looking forward to win tomorrow night, and just when you think they don't win, maybe they'll pull one out tomorrow night. So we'll cross our fingers, and I know they ain't going 0-16. If they go 0-16, you can have me back on the radio, and I'll eat crow, okay, my friend?
How do you like your crow? Do you like it medium well? How do you? let's switch over. So, you know, Jose's not on tonight, so I have free reign to talk NBA. The Knicks are
okay,
on
good.
Right now. And the Knicks are on right now. Frank Iasola has gotten the Twitter, and he's gotten Twitter early. Frank Iasola, the outspoken beat writer for the Knicks for many years. And they're playing for Boston, you know, a rebuilding Boston squad tonight. And Frank has hit Twitter, like I was telling him earlier tonight, same thing with Mark Berman. Frank Iasola just tweeted, "I got the Knicks sweeping Boston in the playoffs this year, even if J.R. Smith elbows every Celtic in the head." Okay, this is Frank for you. Frank also tweeted earlier, Mark Berman tweeted earlier, that Barnyami trade is really working out. His first play as a Knick, he got a charging call against him. Great trade. Also, Frank stated that the Knicks' Italian lineup looks good. Carmelo, born in Brooklyn, and last name Anthony, is an honorary member. That makes three of the starting five being Italian. So, this is preseason banter, everyone. Preseason banter. All joking aside with Twitter, Gary, a lot of news coming out of here with the Knicks today. Mike Woodson said in a pregame, during his pregame press conference, that when J.R. Smith returned, he and Amon Shumpert are going to be battling for the starting two-guard spot this year. So one of those two will be off the bench. Do you agree with the thinking of wanting to start J.R. Smith and not use him as a spark plug off the bench?
I mean, I think at this point I'd rather have Shumpert start and then have J.R. come off in his role as a spark plug. But listen, I think Shumpert is right now really under a microscope. Sounds like he's got some growing up to do at this point, and he really needs to develop and work on his game. I remember in his rookie year, he was fantastic, played good defense. He was a pretty average on the offensive end, and you know, then he got hurt, so obviously he had to recover and stuff. But now he's got to grow up. He's got a great opportunity to seize the two spot. And I hope he gets it. And I really like to see J.R. Smith come off the bench because, as you said, he is a spark plug and he creates another dimension when he comes off the bench.
I just wanted to let you know, our common friend Bernhard just messaged into the show and he says, "Let's go Giants, go Casper." Yes, that happened.
Well, I got a question for you talking about the Knicks. That's one of the things I wanted to ask you is, how would you handicap the Knicks this year, Randy?
Being honest with you, it's nice to have someone ask me a basketball question instead of me asking the basketball question, so I appreciate that. The Knicks are in a really tough situation. I thought last year they overachieved. You had a situation where Chicago didn't have Derrick Rose. Indiana started the season without Danny Granger, and you didn't know what Paul George was. We know what Paul George is now. He's a stud player. And you're going to have Danny Granger back. They lost a little bit of their beef off the bench when they lost Tyler Hansborough to Toronto. The Knicks are not the second best team in this conference. I don't even think they're the fourth best team in their conference. I think they're the fifth in the conference. I think Miami's better than them. I think Chicago's better than them. I think Indy's better than them, and I think Brooklyn's better than them. But that's it. You know, they're the fifth. I think they're the fifth best team. Do I think Miami's gonna be number one? I don't know. Do I think the Knicks will not be in the top three of the Eastern Conference? Mostly because I'm wondering where they're getting their points. You're getting 25 to 35 from Carmelo Anthony a night. So you know that he's good for 25 a night. Last year, J.R. Smith was your second guy.
Right.
And he was erratic at best. You were getting nights where you had Raymond Felton giving you 10 to 15 to 20 points, but you don't want your point guard taking that many shots and getting that many points for you. Amari Stoudemire was so inconsistent last year, the team played better when he was not with the team than he was when he was with the team. So if you're going to get anywhere between 15 to 25 points a night from J.R. Smith, and you're able to get anywhere between 10 to 15 points from Andreas Barnyami, and even get maybe 8 to 10 points from Meta World Peace, and 10 points from Raymond Felton, you're going to have balanced scoring. If those guys can step up and score, they're going to be okay. If they're not scoring, you're asking Carmelo Anthony to do an awful lot. Will J.R. Smith be able to be under control for a full season? I don't know.
Randy, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you think that the Knicks are putting all their eggs in one basket on Bargnani to be the number two at this point?
I don't think they're looking at him as a number two. I think they're going to bank on JR being a number two. I think they want him to be the number three. It also brings up the conversation, what are you going to do about Amari Stoudemire?
Right.
ESPN New York has reported that Carmelo made a statement yesterday that he feels really, really bad about Amari's situation. And I'm glad that he feels bad about it. But the simple fact of the matter is he's uninsured. No team will make a move for him. It's just the way it is. You know, I'm trying to really justify why the Knicks should really be putting it all in with Amari Stoudemire at this point. You know, he's proven that he can't stay healthy for a full season. I'd rather him sit for the first part of the season this year and have him come back when he's healthy than knowing that he's going to be able to contribute. His biggest problem is being able to contribute with Carmelo Anthony on the floor. Carmelo Anthony seems to dominate when the ball's in the post, where, shockingly, that's where Carmelo was, where Amari is more comfortable, down in the post. So it's a real mix and match thing. You know, to answer your question, and I'm sorry that I'm giving you all these different ramblings about it, but I think the Knicks are in a situation where they're really banking on Bargnani to be a number be their third scorer, and J.R. Smith being number two. It's just, it really matters if J.R. Smith can have his head on straight throughout the whole regular season.
So if you think J.R. Smith's, in your mind, the number two, then he should start over Shumpert, right?
I personally would like to see him come off the bench, because if the team comes out flat or Carmelo's not getting shots and you're not getting anything from anybody else, he'll at least be a spark plug off the bench. And you know, you already have, you know, sometimes when you start, you have to find your flow. If he comes in off the bench, he'll start the flow, meaning that he'll be able to adjust to what the Knicks are doing. If they have a lead, he'll help build the lead. If they're down, he's going to help bring the team back. So that's where it's really going to be interesting to see where they put J.R. Smith in that mix.
Yeah, I think the Knicks they have an interesting dynamic, and they have some guys that possibly, and you may be able to elaborate more on, guys we don't know about, that you think there's anyone that the average Knick fan or maybe doesn't follow as much might not know about that could surprise on the Knicks?
Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to get some run this year. They're going to start. They're going to let him play during the preseason, and if he's able to contribute, they're going to let him come off the bench and get some minutes in relief. Help some of these guys out. You know, they bring back the other point guard, Pablo Prigioni, and he played very well last year. So they're starting him tonight. They're resting Shumpert. And you know, Amon Shumpert, they said he's been working on his jumper. That's been one of his weaknesses. He's dynamic when he's going to the basket. He's a lot of fun, and also the best fro in the league, voted the best fro in the NBA, and that says something. You know, Andrew Bynum wanted that award last year, because that's the only thing Andrew Bynum was able to win last year, was the best throw of the NBA. It's so stupid. On the other side of the city, in Brooklyn, I did get to watch a little bit of the Brooklyn Nets versus the Washington Wizards last night. And keeping in mind that it's the Washington Wizards we're talking about,
right.
It was very weird to see Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce in Nets uniforms.
Sure.
Yeah. It was very, 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 very difficult. Your beloved Rangers have started the season.
Yes.
And it has been, Ryan Stern was on earlier with us, and they told us if you're a Ranger fan, it has been nothing more than a roller coaster so far.
That's right, yeah. Rangers have started. Unfortunately, I'm sure Ryan, I don't know if he mentioned, but Rick Nash, probably the most talented player, I should say, the Rangers, suffered a head injury, so we're not sure if it's a concussion or not and how long he's going to be out, but the Rangers can't afford to lose him at this point. Rangers lost a rough one last night, 9-2 in San Jose. They played three games already. They're 1-2. They played a really good game against the Kings, and that was a great win, but they played a back-to-back. I don't know if they were tired or just physically manhandled last night. We didn't watch it. It was past my bedtime and everyone else's because it starts at 10:30 at night, so it's brutal. But Rangers are going to be interesting this year. They have a new coach. It's going to take a while to gel. They got some new players within the fold here. And then also they still have Henrik Lundqvist, the rock of their team. They have some good, solid young defensemen. And the bottom line with the Rangers is going to be is if they can keep up their tempo in games. And the biggest thing is, can they score? Is there enough scoring on that team to elevate them every night? So hockey just begun. I'm excited to see how the Rangers progress and just the whole league in general. The Rangers come back from the West Coast. They have one more in Anaheim, and then they actually play at a St. Hour at 8 o'clock Saturday night. And then they come back and back at their 7 o'clock and 7:30. So anyone that's a Ranger fan out there, they're coming home or they're coming back in the area. And then, as you know, Randy, the Madison Square Garden is going under their final renovations. So the Rangers have started out on the road. I believe it's either 8 or 9 games starting out on the road. And then their first home game is October 28th against Montreal. So this is going to test them, and hopefully they don't fall in a huge hole early, because they're 1-2, but they don't want to fall in a huge hole early because their division is pretty competitive at this point.
Well, and I have to ask you this too, as far as the Rangers. No, not even just the Rangers. This is not Team Casper about that. So I apologize. What happened in fantasy this week? I just want to explain this. For years now, Gary's in a very competitive fantasy football league with friends and family, and our big thing on Sunday mornings is we start talking about fantasy football and the Giants. And our usual thing was, we haven't done it much this year because there hasn't been much to text about. We usually say, text on the first Giants touchdown. So there has been much. I haven't been much to text about, but the conversation has always been about fantasy football. So, in last year, Team Casper was the FFL fantasy football champions. So, what did the defending champions do this past weekend?
Well, going into last week, the champ is 1-3 and is in a very competitive division right now. So, I'll let you know how I did. I'll give you two words. Tony Romo.
Enough said. Enough said, my friend. that's great. Enough said. So I'm taking that as a victory, correct?
You are correct, my friend. A very good, very solid victory and sound victory.
So now you are two and three.
2-3, yep, 2-3, and hopefully we keep going in the right direction here, because again, my division is very competitive. I'm actually in third place, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I will tell you, in the Back Sports Face Fantasy League, I had a 226.55 victory over Anthony, who is our fantasy football expert. 138.05, I had 226.55. It always helps when Peyton Manning gives me 46 points.
That's pretty good. Penn, you beat the fantasy. You beat the fantasy expert guy. That's like extra bonus points there.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely excited about that. And right now I am sitting tied for. We have a 1-2-3-4 way tie for second place, but I am sitting there in the second ranking because I have a point advantage over Anthony, who we heard earlier do our fantasy football update. And I got the biggest blowout of the week report update, so I got that. And I'm just looking at the final here. Just so you know how many points Tony that Peyton Manning gave me. Peyton Manning gave me 49.9 points.
Wow. Yeah, that's, he is just talking about Peyton Manning. How about him, huh, Randy?
Wow. It's been crazy. You know, I just hope they're not setting up for a letdown in the playoffs like last year. Because last year, Denver was seemed to be the pick to get to the Super Bowl. In my eyes, that was how I felt. I felt they had the most complete team. Now he's got even more weapons. His plan is much better. He's got Welker there. And did you see that spin move that Welker did?
Yeah, he's that guy is just Wes Welker is just an unbelievable receiver.
It's crazy, and you know, it's funny. After the first game of the season against Baltimore, I went on the fantasy wire, our waiver wire, not waiver wire, but, you know, like the guys who were the free agent, and Julius Thomas was available. So I picked him up, and I haven't sat him since.
Well, it's funny. He was I believe he was hurt last year, and a lot of people probably didn't know about him. But he is just add him to the list of very athletic tight ends that's now emerging in the NFL. But the guy's a stud.
Yeah, and I think I lucked out finding him on the waiver wire when I did. I'll be honest right there. And you know, this week's matchup, this is where the buys really finally start kicking in this week. And it's going to be a little scary. Let me see. Right now I'm going to pull up on how many guys I have on buy this week. I only have one guy in my starting lineup right now who's a buy, and that's Jakeece Rogers. So sitting him won't kill me. But you know, I'm a big favorite to win this week. So we'll see what happens. What do you think about the big injury to Julius Jones, my friend?
That is a huge injury. First of all, talking about surprises. I mean, there's so many surprises, but I never would have thought Atlanta would be 1-4 at this point. It's a huge loss because if he's out, Roddy White is banged up too. So you take him out, and if you're I know we were just talking about fantasy a little bit, but if you're a Matt Ryan owner, you are struggling right now, losing Julio Jones and then possibly having Roddy White out. Now, they're on a bye, so you don't have Matt Ryan anyway this week. But if you're a Matt Ryan owner, if you can trade for him and get something back worthwhile, you may want to do that. You just have to wait to see the status of Roddy White.
By the way, before we end this show tonight, I want to give you another Frank Isola tweet update. Iman Schumper is going off right now, but in what's in mind, JR is already having a better preseason. This is why he's on Twitter, man. This is why he's joining Twitter.
I know, the Twitter universe that I'm not a part of.
You want no part of.
I don't think so. I don't think Twitter wants me, so. Either. So I think we're a good non-match.
Okay, I'll go with you. Real quick, just what to look for this week. In the last 2 minutes here, Gay. NFL games you're keeping your eyes on this week.
This week? I am interested, obviously, to see how the Giants play this week. It's a big game. It's a big game for both teams. Obviously, I think it's a big game for the for the Giants as well, just to see how they come out and play. It's not a big game, but I'm interested to see with that huge spread as well with Denver and Jacksonville if they really, you know, hand them their lunch this week, just to see with that spread. But you know what? I'm also going to hit Dallas and Washington because NFC East right now is completely up for grabs. That game is a Sunday night game. It's in Dallas. And Dallas has the opportunity. I really feel that Dallas is the best team in that division. And they could really just, you know, Dallas sometimes just gives the games away. And that's a big game for them to win and go to 3-3 and propel them to move on and finally wrap up the division and make a run in the playoffs.
Okay. The game I said earlier tonight, the game I'm looking forward to the most are the Saints and the Patriots. I think that's going to be a real fun, exciting game. It is the national game at 4:25. should be a lot of fun. Gary, we're out of here, my friend. I want to thank you very much for giving a call in and saving me for the last part of the show. And then we also want to thank Ryan Stern for coming on and filling in for the angry one, Jose Padilla. I'd like to thank Louis Musto for coming in from SNY to talk New York Giants football. And we'll be back next week, Real Sports Talk Radio, every Wednesday night from, when the hell are we on? 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock to 8:30 p.m. You think I know this? I'm only the host. Till next week. See you, everybody then.